Paralympic athlete Oscar Pistorius has been released from prison nearly 11 years after killing Reeva Steenkamp in his home in South Africa. The once national hero was granted parole last year after completing more than half of his 13-year sentence for murder. Pistorius, who is now 37 years old, is reportedly staying at his uncle's home in Pretoria. He will also have to abide by restrictions of his parole until his full sentence is completed in 2029. Restrictions include not being able to speak to the media, drink alcohol, or leave his home during certain hours. In his Paralympic career, Pistorius was known as the Blade Runner, earning fame in the 2012 Summer Games. Pistorius shot and killed his girlfriend, 29-year-old Reeva Steenkamp, on Valentine's Day 2013. He claimed he thought he was shooting a burglar through a bathroom door in his home. At his highly publicized 2014 trial, he was originally found not guilty of murder, but guilty of culpable homicide. An appeals court overturned the ruling, convicting him of murder in 2015 and sentenced him to 6 years in prison. In 2017, South Africa's Supreme Court increased his sentence to 13 years and 5 months. Steenkamp's mother reportedly said she accepts his release as part of the South African justice system, but says her family is the one serving a life sentence. For Inside Edition Digital, I'm Mara Montalbano.
Okay, last case of the what was supposed to be mini-series. I'm now going to call Manny-series. It's ridiculous.
Wait, Oscar. Manny? What? It, why?
Manny, like Minnie.
Yeah, but Manny.
Minnie apples. Well, I don't know.
Oh, just, Minnie?
Yeah. What's? Why are you correcting my speech?
I'm not correcting you. I'm trying to understand the Manny part. That doesn't make sense to me. You went from Minnie to Manny. I was like, are you putting words together? Why is it Manny? Minnie?
No, it should be Minnie. But Manny has an A. Like, I don't know why anybody says Minnie. Because it's an A.
Minnie, as in M-I-N-I?
No, I'm saying Manny. Like, we've had many episodes.
Episodes. Gotcha.
So, in other words, we've had a large amount. Right. So, here we are, a minute in. Mm-hmm. My name is Sherry. This is Outline of a Murder. Have my sister introduce herself, of course.
Lena, who has the choice to say what I would like, when I would like, and ask questions and get more data. Go ahead, everyone else. Continue.
Anyway, Mom is here, and her true crime knowledge is so vast, even fictional detectives consult her for advice. Hercule Poirot, move over. We've got Mom.
I love that.
And then we have a special guest. Best friend Susan is with us. She may get a little fiery, possibly, in this case. So we'll see how this goes. But, Mom, tell us about our drink.
And I'm Mom. Everyone was introduced but me.
No,
this
Mom.
Wine is...
No, stop. I said, and Mom is here with us.
I know, but I usually introduce myself.
You just said no one introduced you, but go ahead.
Anyway,
this wine is
in this episode.
We had tacos.
Batonero.
Batonero.
Batonero. Bartonera.
Moscato.
Steven.
Moscato.
She hadn't even had anything to drink yet.
Bartonero.
Okay.
Oh, my word.
It's Barton something. What are you drinking?
It's just a bubbly.
Okay.
A little bottle.
Wait a minute.
Bubbly.
Oh, okay.
What? Damn, woman.
Mm. Very good.
This is my favorite.
Delicious.
We need to go back to Italy so we can have one every day.
Very, very good. Good choice.
My bubbly is so good. It's extra dry.
And it's nice to have a good drink because that one of mine was terrible.
Some of these murders will make you want a drink.
Right.
Lord.
Well, speaking of, so Mom is the one that recommended this case. And when she first texted me, we ought to do the Oscar Pistorius case. I'm like, yeah, I don't want to do it. But because it was Mom, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and kind of dig in a little bit. Wow. I went into a black hole of Oscar Pistorius. And he's the last one because he's the one I'm having the most trouble deciding whether he's guilty or innocent. And I thought it was plain. I think I told you he's guilty. But there's some things in here that when we go over them, I'm super excited to find out what you guys think. Because I couldn't think either way.
I think not guilty.
What about you, Susan?
Guilty is...
Elena. Even, I have no idea about this case.
Oh, you don't?
Oh, okay. Even, but I like how it's guilty, not guilty. I'm not surprised you're saying guilty.
No, because I
pretty say much guilty. Guilty. She said no.
Okay. Not guilty.
Oh. I say guilty. Guilty because as hell.
I saw some of the footage they had and they showed some call. I just, not guilty. At the very least, though, so he could have got, you know, maybe manslaughter, but not guilty.
And you're not sure?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I would not have been able to convict him in a court of law. We're also going to discover that the African system of justice is much different.
I'm sure.
From the American system. And but he was called the Blade Runner. His story is very interesting. The location is Pretoria, South Africa, at Oscar Pistorius's home. It's a nice house. This is one of the pictures of the inside.
Nice.
And
is that a wine cellar? I'm sorry, go back.
Wine cellar.
Do you see that in the back?
I do.
There's no wine in it, but I'm going to say it's a wine cellar. Wow.
And then this is the outside of his house. So this is South Africa. And here's another. Now, this is going to be important later. This was the room that they were located in. But there are other houses around their house, and there are some crime scene photos. So I'm going to try to do my best to
warn you.
And he was a very inspiring individual. He was born November 22nd, 89, and he didn't have a fibula bone in either of his legs. So he was born that way versus maybe, you know, like a car wreck and things like that. And the reason that was important is his parents, Henke and Sheila Pistorius, they made, when he was 11 months old, the difficult decision to have his legs amputated. And then after that, they treated him like all their other kids. They did not baby him as far as, you know, his having a disability. He did have fiberglass pegs as a child, so that's how he learned to walk. And like they, I mean, he hates the word disability to this day because that's not how he was raised. His Very sibling cool. put on shoes, he put on his legs. I mean, that's just, you know.
I love hearing stories like that with parents making that decision.
I do too. And his parents, they seem like they were probably well off. They owned a zinc mining company in Johannesburg. They seem to be go-getters. They encourage Pistorius to participate in sports from a young age, which, again, I think is awesome because they could have been like, oh, he'll get hurt or he'll be made fun of, but they didn't go that direction at all. He played water polo and rugby as a child. Then in two... Oh, yeah.
Water?
Yeah, polo? Water polo and rugby.
Well, look at his arms. I mean, yeah.
He, when he was 16 or 17 in 2003, he severely injured his knee while playing rugby. And so part of his rehabilitation was running, which is, I'm like, really? I wouldn't think that that impact of running would be a good idea. But anyway, that was part of his rehabilitation. And it was during this time that he got his first set of carbon fiber, prosthesis. And then the rest is history. I mean, he loved running. He loved his carbon fiber legs, so he won the 200-meter track event in 2004 at the Paralympic Games in Athens, which we saw the stadium there.
Yeah.
And then he won a bronze medal in the 100-meter sprint, And then he earned his fame when he won 3 gold medals at the 2008 Beijing Paralympics, and he set a world record in his class.
Dang.
So he's good. He's a very powerful, obviously, physique to handle that type of competing. He also made it his mission to challenge the idea that disabled athletes shouldn't compete in the Olympics. So that was his thing in other competitions. He didn't want them to be separated by this Paralympic stuff. So if someone is competing in that and they wanted to go over and compete in the Olympics, they should have the choice to do so.
Absolutely.
But there were several things that the people were like, well, we're not sure it's fair because, number one, those weigh much less than, you know, someone that has their full legs. So they were a little bit worried about that. They were also worried about the spring action, if that gave him more of a competitive momentum advantage. Mm-hmm. Okay. But if I'm not mistaken, he did run. I recall some photos of him running with other runners that had their full legs.
He did.
Okay.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, I wondered too about the spring, you know, being so light. But maybe not, because they have a lot of restrictions in Olympics, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure they do. Now, things weren't always rosy with him. His home life left its mark. His mother, Sheila, died of an allergic reaction to medication in 2002. And so remember, it was 2003 when he had to take up running. So she had died when he was 15. And then he and his siblings, Carl and Amy, were estranged from their father after her death, and they were raised by an aunt and uncle.
Wow. I wonder why.
I don't know. I mean, maybe he was, you know, hardcore man and didn't have much time for the kids, or maybe he had a volatile temper. I don't know.
Or maybe he was grieving. Yeah.
Maybe grieving.
It was too hard. But it did use the word estranged, or estranged. So it makes me wonder if there was some, you know, bitterness or some fighting. So if anyone knows, I would love to hear what that was. Now, I want to, and I've got all these links in the show notes, but I'd like you guys to pick out some things that could possibly be a factor in this case, okay, on the things I'm about to show you. Because he was describing his mom, and he said that his mother, Sheila, taught him not to use the word disability as an excuse. If I fell, she let me get up for myself, and she didn't baby me. And she treated me exactly the same as my brother and sister. He said on his early prosthetics, I was 13 months old when I got my first leg, which was conical shaped. It really wasn't a prosthetic leg with a foot, but I learned how to stand up with them and to move around, and I walked when I was 17 months old, which isn't bad considering he didn't have any legs.
Right.
Right.
He said in primary school, his prosthetic legs that he had then were very heavy, so they didn't really allow him to be as mobile as in later years when the technology got better. When a boy in school ripped all the buttons off his shirt, Sheila told him not to let that happen again. So Pistorius got in a fight with the boy, and he and his mother were summoned by the headmaster, and she defended her son for fighting. She said, my family always believed in standing up for yourself and standing up for what you believe in. We were taught that you have to cope. Sheila Pistorius sent the shirt to the boy's mother to sew the buttons back
on. Oh,
taught to cope.
Mm-hmm. She was a pistol.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Don't use that intended word.
Mm-hmm. Now, his mother had a lot of fear, though, security concerns. They grew up in a family where his dad wasn't around much, so his mother always had a pistol, and she would often get scared at night, and then she would phone the police. We didn't stay in the best of suburbs. It was often crime in the area. On a couple of occasions, they did break into our home, and more often than not, was just her being scared. So she would come home at night and call us to go sit in her room, and many times we would just wait for the police to arrive. And then she kept her firearm in a padded bag under the window.
Wow.
That seemed to transfer to him. So he remembers climbing into a cupboard and phoning his sister to come and sit by him, which she did for a while.
Oh.
That may kind of go to what occurred as well. Mm-hmm. His mother's death was when he was away at boarding school. My brother and I didn't know she was sick, and by the time we heard, she was already in a coma. Oh. So I'm wondering if that's part of the estrangement. And then his legs were not of equal length. So if he doesn't have his prosthetic legs on, he's he's uneven, and he's even a dog can just knock him over. So if you have the learned fear, they live in South Africa. Where they live did have a high crime rate. Plus, without his legs, he definitely would be very vulnerable. I think some of that can aid in the fear. But there's some other things that, to me, only the killer would do.
I'm thinking when he was had to be in the cupboard, made his sister sit by him, had some, factor.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. It could have been. In 2010, he wrecked his boat and he suffered a head injury preventing him from competing. Empty beer bottles were discovered on the boat. No charges were brought against him. And then he went on to compete in the 2011 Paralympic World Cup, winning two more medals. At the time of this incident, he was 26. Now, Reva.
She's pretty.
Oh, wow. She's gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. She was born, her name is Reva Steenkamp. She was born in Cape Town, August 19th, 1983, to Barry and June Steenkamp. They moved to Port Elizabeth, and her dad trained horses, and he seemed to do quite well. She was an avid horse rider until she fell and broke her back in her early 20s, and she had to learn to walk again.
Wow.
She then pivoted to modeling and law school.
Oh, so impressive.
Yeah. And she was obviously stunning, natural beauty. She could go around without makeup and take your breath away when you saw her. I mean, that's how pretty she was. Her beauty had already established her as a successful model. She was the face of Avon in Africa. So if you saw Avon, you saw her face. She was also a law school graduate, and she applied to the bar in 2011, and she was hoping to get her full-time lawyer credentials by the age of 30.
Smart.
So let's see. If she was born in 83, so yeah, she was, 29? Yeah, so she was 29 going on 30, so she hoped to get her credentials then.
Driven? And
then, oh, yeah, very driven, very ambitious, but did you also notice she was older than Oscar?
Like 5 or 6 years old,
yeah,
or something.
He was only 26, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. Or, yeah, I think he was 26 because he was born in, let me get back up there, 1986. So
yeah, that's only 3 years.
Yeah, so she was a little bit older.
Oh, I thought he was born in 89.
Mm-mm. Oh. But the boating incident was either right around the time he met her or pretty close. And at the time when she was killed, she was 29. She was considered, well, she was modeling. She was a paralegal while she waited for her credentials. She was considered a socialite, a celebrity. She was on a couple of reality TV shows. One aired the month she was killed. They went ahead and ran the show. She was described as, quote, continuously breaking the model stereotype and was the sweetest, kindest, just angelic soul and a very inspiring individual. And she was also passionate about empowering women and had a public speaking career as well.
Dang.
Oh, very successful.
That is very busy.
So both of them are high achievers, obviously. And I think they made a handsome couple.
Oh, that doesn't look like
that's
her.
A cute couple.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like how they were looking at each other in that one. Like they got tickled or something. Or maybe the photographer's like, look at each other like you love each other. And then they start smiling. But yeah, they weren't dating long, actually, when everything went down. But they did seem to hit it off pretty quick. So high achievers, they've both had to overcome obstacles. Him not having legs, her having to learn how to walk again after breaking her back.
Where'd you say they met?
I haven't. And then we also can see they have a high work ethic. So they're not... People are just sitting around collecting, money from their work. They're like working hard to build a solid life. They met in November 2012 at a lunch at a car racing track. And so this is what Pistorius said about her when he was interviewed. He said, I was very keen on Reva. I think if anything, I was maybe more into her than she was at times into me. I just let her take her space, but it wasn't always easy.
He's insecure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, okay, so there's not much age difference there. And I don't know about you guys, but when I was in my 20s, it would have been weird to me to date someone younger than me that much. Like, I could see maybe mm-hmm. a few months or a year, but, Mom, we know that's not the case with you.
Right. Right. I don't know why you're going,
Whatever. Steven's like, don't even start.
But in my 20s, that would almost be like being, I don't know, graduating and then dating someone in high school. It would, now, I don't know if it'd bother me that much, but at that age, I would be a little bit reluctant to date a 26-year-old if I was 29. What do you think, Elena?
If you were a 29-year-old female, 26-year-old male?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would give it a whirl if they were mature and fun and, you know, checked off my boxes.
Sometimes that's not accepted, like if it was reversed. Mm-hmm. The man was
older. Well, I think that sometimes age, it probably wouldn't be that big of a deal. They're 29 maybe. To 26.
Yeah.
But I don't know. As what a female, you, that was just weird.
I think in your 20s, it's okay. But if you're in your teens,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, be a little bit weird.
If you're 18 and they're 14, no.
I mean,
no, you know, in your 20s, right. A family but, member.
Yeah, I mean, when you're young, anything goes. But I think as you get older, you don't really look at it as much.
Yeah, well, maybe that's a personal preference. Yeah. I would think it's a little bit weird. And I'm not saying that their age difference is wrong, but I do think it played a factor in some of what occurred. And also, I do believe he is insecure. So I'm not, you know, I don't think it's a big deal, but I do know there can be a huge amount of growth that can happen in a person in their 20s in just a year to two, three. Mm-hmm. In fact, yeah. Most of the brains, especially the males, aren't even fully developed till they're 25.
Yeah.
So they're still quite young. I think girls are by 21. So there can definitely be a difference there. I do know when I was at 26, I was selfish. I was insecure. I didn't, you know, I was very concerned about what people thought about me. And then rejection was a big deal. So I don't know if he had a lot of that. I don't know if he got razzed a lot because of his legs. I don't know any of those things. But I'm thinking that maybe some of that came out. And then when I look at 29, there was definitely a maturing that had occurred in just those few years. So I just remember feeling calmer, more focused on the inside. I started getting more goal-oriented and how I wanted life to look. But there was kind of like this settling that occurred. But you know what was funny? When I turned 30, I remember Kent, he was 10, and he was sitting on the couch at our old house. And I said, well, son, and I was holding my coffee. I said, I have officially reached the age of maturity, you know, age 30. So I took a big old swig of coffee, started choking, sprayed it all over the living room, cracked up. And he's just staring at me like, you're just ridiculous. I don't even know what to do with
that
you.
Maturity.
So that maturity didn't kick in until probably my 40s. But neither Oscar or Reva had any children from previous relationships. So they just seemed to have a good relationship from the start, enjoyed each other. But I also wondered, so he, you know, sports is his thing. So I'm just kind of setting the groundwork, right? These are just things I wondered about as I was researching. So here you have this woman who is a model of, and the face of Avon. She's been on TV. She's 29. She's obviously smart. She's about to be a lawyer. And you have him that has done sports.
Hmm. You can look at that picture and you can see the maturity in her and you can see the young boy in him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
must have boosted his,
you know,
boosted.
I mean,
him.
Just looking at them, you can see her.
So
see her maturity or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So maybe it fed into his insecurity.
That's what I'm wondering mm-hmm. because, you know, like, did he feel intimidated because she was older, had a law degree, she was tough as nails, she was financially stable? Did he feel like he was just a dumb jock, you know? Or he could have been the other part where he was very arrogant, you know, over his accomplishments. But not from what I found out. I mean, everybody that they interviewed about him, he was extremely humble.
Right.
So I don't know. And we might be, you know, stereotyping, or I might be. I just, I... these are questions I had of like, okay, was it a fear-based incident or did he get in a rage and shot her because of insecurities or whatever? And the reason I asked that is the relationship was very young. Like, if it was a rage deal, he attached to her quick. Kind of like that case we did last season where the girl barely knew the dude and they traveled to California.
Yes.
And he ended up killing her. Mm-hmm. So he definitely attached if it was a rage-based shooting. What do you think?
I don't think it was rage-based at all.
I don't know. I don't know anything.
I think it was a horrible accident by his insecurities from when he was younger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and he fell hard for her. I mean, anybody that, you know, interviewed him, he fell hard.
Well, and he said, you know, I don't know if she was as into me
as I was into her.
And that was when they first met. He was already attached.
Yeah.
When she's like, yeah, you might be all right. Or he was already in.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, if he had seen her around or if this was just the first time he met her and he was like, I'm head over heels in love with her and she's maybe taking it a little bit slower.
Or how many relationships he's had before.
I don't know how many serious ones he's had,
so he may not have had any.
That may have been his first serious relationship. Yeah. So I am curious on their dynamics. But 2 days before she died, on February 12, 2013, she met her ex-boyfriend for coffee. And he said that Pistorius called Reva every 20 minutes.
Ooh.
And he asked Reva if everything was okay. Because, you know, she's getting these phone calls. He's like, hey, is everything all right? And she's like, yeah, there's nothing wrong.
So when did they start dating?
That November.
And then when was this?
February.
February.
Dang.
5 months.
Three. And there were also text messages that could make you think he was definitely jealous and insecure. But there were also tons of text messages where they seemed to have a great relationship. But
meeting your ex-boyfriend for coffee, though, if he knew, that'd make you very insecure, I think.
Yeah, and why would she like be? That.
No, why but would she?
It could be her relationship philosophy. I mean, there's plenty of people where they're like, hey, we may not be dating anymore, but we can go have a cup of coffee.
Yep.
You know, I wouldn't like that. I'd be like, no, unless I'm going, you know.
Right.
But I could see that it just really depends on the relationship and how she viewed those. Like, does she have a more mature stance where I'm having coffee with a friend, even though we have a past, where I would be like, what are you doing? You know, so. No telling. Mm-hmm. No telling what their philosophy was. They, you know, had been dating for 3 months when she was killed. Investigators looked over 1,700 text messages in their phone and WhatsApp.
Wow.
90% were loving and normal. So that's quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But in a few, Reva said that Pistorius was jealous and possessive. 3 weeks before her death, she texted, I'm scared of you sometimes, of how you snap at me. And she also described some of his behavior as nasty. There was also an incident at a friend's when Pistorius accused her of flirting with a friend's husband, and he made a scene, and they had to leave early. So when I watched videos of Reva compared to Pistorius, I couldn't help but noticing how outgoing she was, and he was not. He was more introverted. And so I wondered if he took her socializing as flirting. Like, she would be the one that would be talking to everybody. You know, wife, husband, it didn't matter. She would have been talking to everybody. He was definitely more reserved. And I could see how if she's laughing, touching someone on the shoulder, you know, he might think she's being flirtatious.
Or she was flirtatious.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. She could Especially have been. If it was his first serious relationship.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't think that they were a good fit from the start. Of course, the prosecution used all of this during the trial, which we'll get to. But
one second. So, I know that new relationships. it's strange, awkward. You're going to make those ridiculous errors, accusations, thoughts.
That's true. I did
because you're super. Well, I was insecure at the beginning of relationships. Yep. So. I don't know.
Yeah. And, I mean, if we think about it, like, her parents were still together. They seemed to be very close-knit as a family. He didn't have that. He was raised by an aunt and uncle. His mom died. He was estranged from his dad. So you cannot not have problems from those types of things. And so we know that abandonment, loss that early can lead to fear of abandonment and fear of rejection.
Plus, you may not have a model of what a good relationship looks like.
Exactly. And I don't know how his aunt and uncle were.
Right.
They might have been awesome, but in spite of that, he still had all of that trauma at a very young age.
Yeah.
Now, here's where the murder comes in. We're going to start having some scenes, Elena. So Reva packed an overnight bag. Wow. I wonder if our listeners just heard that.
I couldn't help it. I knew if I didn't. I was trying to be discreet. Like, please be low, because if not, it'd go out the nose. That really burned. And there's still another.
Okay.
Oh. That was so loud.
At least making Elena bubbly.
That was loud.
Right.
Did y'all hear that?
Wow. Okay. So, we have the coffee date with the boyfriend on the 12th.
Mm-hmm.
And then Reva packed an overnight bag to stay with Pistorius for Valentine's Day 2013. The relationship on the whole seemed to be going well, minus, some disagreements. By the early morning hours, she was dead. So I'm going to read you the details from Pistorius's own words, okay, in an affidavit that he gave to the court. I'm going to use American time because I don't know what 2200 is, okay? All right. Okay, so by about 10 on February 13th, we were in our bedroom. She was doing her yoga exercises, and I was in bed watching TV. My prosthetic legs were off. After Reva finished her yoga exercises, she got into bed, and we both fell asleep. During the early morning hours of February 14th, I woke up, went onto the balcony to bring the fan in and close the sliding doors, the blinds, and the curtains. So it was super hot that time of year. And he, it seems, had everything open, which is interesting because he had a tremendous fear of being robbed in his home. So either the heat was stifling or that's a lie.
Yes, that and that house looked very modern. So maybe he felt
safe.
Confident that no one could get in there. But that is very weird.
Especially if he is upstairs.
Yeah, that's true, because in one of the pictures where it shows the balcony, let's see. Yeah, that would have been hard to get down to.
Yeah,
yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's
or
a door.
You could go up there.
Yeah, that's a door.
And then go that way. Yeah, it
that
is
sure
a door.
Is going an extra mile.
Yeah, it would
and
take
you'd
a
hear
lot.
Somebody if they were.
I
yeah.
think if it's a typical, you know, burglar, they're not going to go to those extremes. I mean, if they're James Bond, okay. But we know
right.
that he's
yeah.
fiction, right?
Maybe, yeah.
But so, is he?
He said that he heard a noise in the bathroom and he realized someone was in there. I believe that someone had entered my house. I was too scared to switch the light on. I grabbed my 9mm from underneath my bed. On the way to the bathroom, I screamed words to the effect for him or them to get out of my house and for Reva to phone the police. It was pitch dark in the bedroom and I thought Reva was in bed. I noticed that the bathroom window was open. I realized that the intruders was or were in the toilet because the toilet door was closed and I did not see anyone in the bathroom. I heard movement inside the toilet. The toilet is inside the bathroom and has a separate door. It filled me with horror and fear of an intruder or intruders being inside the toilet. I thought he or they must have entered through the unprotected window. As I did not have my prosthetic legs and felt extremely vulnerable, I knew I had to protect Reva and myself. I believed that when the intruders came out of the toilet, we would be in grave danger. I felt trapped as my bedroom door was locked and I have limited mobility on my stumps. I fired shots at the toilet door and shouted to Reva to phone the police. She did not respond, and I moved backwards out of the bathroom, keeping my eyes on the bathroom entrance. Everything was pitch dark in the bathroom, and I was still too scared to switch on the light. When I reached the bed, I realized that Reva was not in the bed, and that is when it dawned on me that it could have been Reva who was on the toilet. I returned to the bathroom calling her name. I tried to open the toilet door, but it was locked. I rushed back into the bedroom and opened the sliding door, exiting onto the balcony, and screamed for help. So we're going to break the timeline down some more.
His behavior, though, goes back to his childhood. How his mother was scared of everything. He hid in the cupboard.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But the very first thing that I thought of is he's supposedly screaming for them to get out of the house. Reva, call the police. Are you just going to sit there on the toilet and not say anything?
Well, maybe he was so hysterical that he didn't hear anything.
He had no legs. Mm-hmm. He waddles his way to the balcony and drags a fan and does all this stuff with no legs. How are you going to drag all that if his legs are not balanced properly? I mean,
well, he did that, very well, you know,
like
since,
we would.
17 months old. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have no doubt that he did that.
Yeah, and actually, the police do agree that he did not have his stumps on at the time of the shooting because of the bullet trajectories.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't have his prosthetic legs on, and there's a reason for that, which we'll get into, which I find very interesting. Okay, so he was describing the toilet. The window is up over here.
Is that a scene?
There's a little bit of blood on the corner.
Not a lot, though.
The window is up here. She was in here behind the door, right? So that's why, you know, he's like, I don't know where she was, blah, blah. And then that's the cricket bat. Okay, so it appears that after he screamed for help, he put on his legs, he went back to the toilet, and he tried to kick the door down. When that didn't work, he grabbed a cricket bat and used that to make a hole large enough for him to unlock the toilet door, where he discovered Reva crumpled on the floor. So let me give you a basic lay of the land. I don't think I have a picture of the bedroom, but so if we go here, this is the bedroom. It appears that these were the doors that he had open. He had the fan out there trying to get some of the night air to cool off their bedroom. Both are upstairs. So he's got his bedroom, and then if you walk down a short hallway, you then get to the bathroom. Okay? So it's all upstairs. Anything else. And then also notice the floors are like a ceramic tile or marble. That would, so to me, like you would think, okay, if it's marble, it would be louder. It would, unless you're not wearing shoes. So let's say that he gets up to bring the fan in, and then she gets out of bed to go use the restroom. He would not have heard her, more than likely. But what I can't get past is he's screaming, and like Elena said, she doesn't say anything. Well, she just is quiet while he's screaming to call the police. I'd be like, okay, let me grab my phone. Well, I know for a fact I would, because when the house across the street was on fire, I'm yelling, and Mike's like, I'm up, and he, you know, got himself and gathered together. Same thing when we had the shooting.
Unless he was real hysterical. And yeah.
The first one.
Which one? Hysterical and loud and screaming to scare him constantly. I could see where he couldn't hear.
No, her.
Her.
No, I think I know what she's saying. Like he's
still just yelling.
Yeah.
And may not be hearing her.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a little bit hard for me to swallow.
Innocent.
Guilty.
A little passive aggressive there. Yeah. So. Again, master bedroom is a suite with an opening into the main bathroom area with the window above the bathtub. And now, let me get into some more details, and let's discuss some of the bothersome things, okay? So, as stated, I want to make sure, yeah, we're going to have, this is definitely going to be a two-parter, like I said. So, let me get back to the house. Okay. Pistorius and Reva went to bed around 10. Pistorius arranged two fans in the doorway to the balcony because the air conditioning wasn't working. and he was trying to bring some outside air into the bedroom because it was very hot and humid. Pistorius stated that he normally sleeps on the right side of the bed, but he slept on the left side that night due to a shoulder injury. So Riva took the right side. His iPad and prosthetic legs were on the right side with her. Her bag and sandals were on the left side, okay? So it's normal. So they're going to go to bed. He's like, I've got this shoulder injury. Can we trade sides? Absolutely. So her stuff stays on her side. His stuff stays on his side, including his legs. There's numerous reports that he was hypervigilant due to the high crime rate in South Africa, despite its small population. Most South Africans own more than one gun for protection. And he even tweeted a little before the killing that he was terrified when he arrived home thinking an intruder was in the house and found it was only his washing machine.
Ooh.
He claimed he went into full combat mode.
Paranoid.
And I'm thinking, okay, if you're that... Now, this is where I have problems. If you're that fearful of an intruder, why would you leave your legs on the other side of the bed?
Well, if you know you have a shoulder injury, you know you have sleep on the opposite side. When you go to bed, wouldn't you take your legs off on the side you're going to be on? So when you get up in the morning, you're going to put them on?
And then I thought that it was odd that they didn't like switch their things or decided after they had gotten in bed.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I could see that you think, I'm going to sleep on my normal side. You know, I'm fine. And then you get in there and you're like, oh, this is hurting. Can we switch?
So you just roll over.
Yeah, but again, he is so paranoid. I just don't see him not taking his legs to the other side. He gets his gun and takes it to the other side, but he doesn't take his legs.
Maybe he didn't think he'd need the legs.
Or he was super self-sufficient without them.
Yeah, and he was.
Self-sufficient, mobile.
But he said himself that he was very vulnerable and that a dog could knock him over. And he even said he felt very vulnerable because he didn't have his legs on.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't like that the one thing you remember to take to the other side is your weapon, but you don't take your legs. That bothers me.
Yep.
Definitely. So that's the first thing.
Well, maybe to him it was like me, like, oh, I think I'll get the gun, but I'm going to leave my slippers over there or my clothes
slippers
over there.
Slippers are way different from legs.
Well, I know, yeah, but in his way of thinking, though, the immaturity.
But the fact that he didn't have good balance. He could be knocked over easy.
That's like why I'm questioning the fans, the door. You got no balance, but you can drag all, like, that's just... I don't know.
Well, yeah, because he'd been doing it since he was 18 months or 17.
And you have
Yeah, but he just said he doesn't have the balance.
Yeah.
That doesn't bother me as much as the fact that he's so paranoid that he thinks an intruder is in his house when it's a washing machine and he doesn't take his legs over. I'm sorry. There's
no doubt. That's how you're going to get around, exactly. Run, chase, do whatever.
Because clearly he's fast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I'm with no legs and I'm going to sleep on the other side of the bed, I am taking... my legs. I will even take my slippers. I may leave my phone on the other side because, you know, when I was married, if Mike needed to grab a phone, it's right there. But I'm going to take my slippers because if I need to slip on some shoes and take off running, I'm going to have some.
However, on the other side of it, I could see him thinking that if anything were going to happen, he would be in his bed. Wouldn't have to get up. That way he, you know, that's why he just had his gun. That's all he cared about.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. I don't know.
Good point.
Yeah. I don't think so.
That's what I'm going with. I still say
you're
innocent.
Being biased. I hope you have an open mind.
I do have an open mind, but so far there's nothing you have said that makes me think he's guilty.
Mm-hmm. He said that he woke up because he couldn't sleep, and Steenkamp also woke up and said, "You can't sleep, Baba." So that was her nickname for him, and then his was Angel for her. He got up without his legs. He moved the fans away from the balcony door to inside the room and shut the doors. Then he pulled the curtains tight to block out some light coming through. He also got Steenkamp's jeans from the floor to cover a small LED light on an amplifier. So her clothes were on her side, so they were right there. He, puts her jeans over that little LED light. I don't know if this was normal. Like, did he need absolute darkness? There's some people that the tiniest light will keep them awake. So is that, or was he preparing a crime scene?
How in other words, he's going to
all the lights so no one can see what's happening in the room. I don't know. I just know that he had neighbors close enough that they were a risk. If they saw movement and they recognized it was him, because obviously he didn't have his legs and he was short, then they would be able to say he shot her.
But the LED light, I don't think that that points to setting up a crime scene.
I don't either, except my clock, which is LED, puts off a lot of light. So if it was a bright one, but it was on an amplifier, so I don't know. Was it white? Was it blue? Was it red? How bright could it have been? Dusty, do you know?
He's asleep.
Oh, he's asleep. Okay.
Right, he does like his LEDs.
So he then said that's when he heard the noise of a window opening in the bathroom, and he thought it might be the intruder coming into the window using a ladder. So then he gets his gun that was on the left side where he was at, but he didn't have his legs there, and he whispered to Steenkamp to call the police as he moved down the short hallway.
This is a different story?
Before, he was screaming at her. And now he's saying he whispered.
I thought he was screaming at her in the bathroom.
Right.
That's how it sounded. He was screaming in the bathroom for her.
Let's see.
Because if she didn't answer, he supposedly whispered, then he would have known she wasn't there.
Mm-hmm. On my way to the bathroom, I screamed words to the effect of him or them to get out, and then I screamed for Reva to phone the police.
Yeah.
He didn't whisper. So in the second story, he's saying he whispered to her.
So in my mind, he's like right there with her, whispering.
But he didn't say that the first time.
I know. That's weird. Yeah.
So he's saying in one story, he's out of the bed already.
Yeah.
And then he's going down the hallway screaming. In this story, he's saying that he's whispering to her to call the police as he's going to the bathroom. I don't know which one it is.
And that's bad.
Go ahead.
Because if she didn't answer whispering, then you would know that she wasn't there.
Or his mind was in such terror. It could be two stories. I mean, two instances.
Explain it.
When he gets out of bed, and then yelling at her to call the police again when he's up.
So they're talking to each other. You can't sleep, Baba? He said no. He gets up and moves the fans. And in the first story, he's screaming at the intruders. In this one, he's whispering to her.
Right.
So are you thinking that he was whispering to her first as he started screaming, like before he started screaming for the intruders?
As he got closer. And as far as the legs go, I'm thinking if there was an intruder, he had his gun, he could have shot him as they came out of the bathroom from the bed. Mm-hmm. I mean, or maybe he didn't have, I don't know. So far, nothing.
Well, he gets his gun after opening the window to bring the fans in under the left side, whispers to her to call the police as he moved down the hallway with his gun drawn and in front of him. So the problem I have with this is that if he's already up and he goes to get his gun, and they've had this conversation, and she whispers to him, why wouldn't she respond back?
Well, do we know?
Why wouldn't she be talking to him?
Do we know when the conversation they had, though? It could have been before they went to sleep or trying to sleep. No, it was after.
He said he woke up because he couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
And Reva woke up as well and said, you can't sleep, Baba.
And then she could have went back to sleep, and he could for a short time.
No, they didn't. He didn't go back to sleep. He heard the noise. And so then he says he went over and got his gun and whispered to her to call the police. But in the first story, he's yelling everything. He's just changing his story. I don't like it. So I want to know, did you whisper and then start yelling? Or did you yell the whole time? Like, don't start changing stuff up on me.
Right.
I don't like that.
And I feel like if he was whispering, then he would have been closer to her and immediately realized she wasn't there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excuse me.
So, yeah, he got his gun. He goes to the bathroom. He said he had to lean against the wall for better stability on his stumps, scanning for any intruders.
Okay, hold on. Should have put on the legs. You have a gun in your hand. You want to take care of business. You're not going to take a chance of falling over.
I know.
But if it was an intruder, you can't say, hang on, I have to get my legs on.
How long did it take to put those legs on?
Yeah,
we don't know. We don't know.
Probably, well, I mean, you can look at them and see. He probably just needed to slip them on. It'd be like putting his shoes on. So if you think the intruders are in the bathroom, you can quickly go over, get your prosthetic legs on, and then get into the bathroom. So I can see both ways. I can see that he would be on his stumps as much as he would get his legs. So I can see both. Mm-hmm. I don't think it points to guilt or innocence. It's just weird. It's just weird to me. There's just weird things that I don't understand.
I just think that the whole vulnerability concern, that would make you super vulnerable.
Yeah.
If you felt unstable.
Yeah. So he claimed that he yelled for the person to get out of the house, yelled again for her to call the police. So maybe this is where the yelling is. He whispers the first time, then he starts yelling, then he yells at her. At this point, he said, I'm trying to figure out why Steenkamp hasn't called out in response to his yelling. That's my thoughts. If I heard someone yelling to call the police, I would immediately yell back, I'm on it. You know, like... I just don't believe.
That was your thought, saying.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was hers.
No, I just don't believe he's doing all this yelling and she's not saying a word, that she's absolutely silent. I don't believe that.
But she may have said a word and he was yelling so much.
No. Yeah, I don't think so.
The adrenaline.
No.
Yeah, the adrenaline, the danger, he thought. See, I do.
Nope.
It's possible.
I've been in situations where I've had to get up in the middle of the night, grab my gun, rack it, although I didn't all the way, and then get to the living room. Same thing with Mike. You don't hear stuff. Your hearing gets very sharp. It's not, you're just like deaf. You're not in water.
Well,
there's
some
no
people
slow
might
motion.
React a little different.
Yeah,
though.
Everyone's different. Yeah. I'm thinking the adrenaline's got you going. You're not hearing, you're not processing, you're not thinking of anything.
Well, the purpose, though, of adrenaline is to help you process. True. It is to make your eyesight goes better, your ears get better. Adrenaline is not like cortisol, which can lower those things. It's made for that. It gives you more strength. Mm-hmm. It gives you the ability to run faster. So... maybe some people don't react to adrenaline the same way, but most people, they're going to hear better and even be able to see better during that time because it's a safety mechanism. So anyway, these are just questions I have. You know, it is marble floors. Noise bounces off the marble floors. You know, if he's yelling, like you said, if she's yelling, maybe he's not he's not hearing because he's yelling and everything's loud. I don't know. So he was afraid someone was going to come out of the bathroom, and he heard wood moving and thought the door to the toilet was opening. So he said that he was overcome with fear and fired 4 shots in quick succession through the toilet room door. Now, here's where I believe he couldn't hear anything, because once you've shot a gun, you cannot hear anything.
Right.
All you hear is ringing. And so I could see that without the earplugs, from that point on, he wouldn't be able to hear for a little bit. So he then says he returned to bed, still aiming his gun at the bathroom, hopped onto the bed, and felt around for Reva. So now he's realizing she's not in bed. Okay? So he said when he couldn't find her, he thought she was hiding on the floor or behind the curtains. So he checked those areas too. I guess he did all of this in the dark because he was too scared to turn on the lights. Again, Reva's quiet. He said that's when he realized she must have been in the toilet.
His first story, though, I would have turned the lights on. But his first story, he went and drew the curtains to let some light in to look around, didn't he? And that's when he realized she wasn't in the bed. I thought that was his first story.
And, you know, sorry. I wouldn't have turned on the lights. I know that when we had the shooting right next door, I didn't want anybody to be able to see me. So I kept the lights off because I need the cover of darkness just as much as the other person.
Mm-hmm.
So that part doesn't bother me. But again, I'm just not seeing how you wouldn't know.
Okay. He was trying to find her. Mm-hmm. I would have turned on the lights. Where are you?
Mm-hmm.
I need to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, if you knew how many and that was it. Huh? I mean, I'm like Sherry. I would keep it dark so no one could see me. Because there might have been more than one in it, you know, intruder. Yeah. Someone hiding. Yeah.
But with his story, she was his focus at that point. Mm-hmm. He wasn't thinking about if there were other people. I get what y'all are saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or he may not have been thinking about turning the light on.
But he went just to find the her. Lines or the tree. Yeah. I don't know.
Anyway, I don't either.
Just a thought.
So he said that he ran to the balcony and screamed for help. And then he grabbed his legs, kicked the door, beat the hole in the door, unlocked it, discovered her. He stated that he sat over her and cried. He then ran to the left side of his bed to grab his phone. And then he went back to Steen Camp and he called his neighbor at 3:19 and then an ambulance at 3:20. And then he called security at 3:21.
Why didn't he call ambulance first?
Good question.
Okay.
So then he picked her up and he carried her downstairs. So let me show you that. And it is bloody. So they're in the upstairs. Up in that area. So he carries her down and obviously mm-hmm. she bled out there. The neighbor, a doctor, arrived and oh, maybe that's why, because the neighbor was a doctor.
Oh, okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Get the doctor here first, then true. Get the ambulance.
Okay.
He said that the neighbor arrived and saw Pistorius crying uncontrollably, praying, and he had his fingers in her mouth trying to keep her airway open. And a hand on her hip to try to stop the bleeding. The doctor took over life-saving measures, which this bothers me too. Why did he move the body? Like in America, you can't do that. However, he's trying to get her downstairs because he knows that's where the ambulance yeah, and people are going to come. Yeah,
get her closer, quicker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, let's see. Police and paramedics arrive asking him to go and stay in the kitchen. They let him know that she was dead. He asked the police if he could wash his bloody hands because the smell of her blood was making him ill. And then 2 hours later, Pistorius asked the police to take whatever photos of him that were needed so that he could get the blood-soaked clothes off.
The GSR is what he was washing off.
Maybe.
What is
well,
that?
No, he didn't need to because he admitted to shooting her.
Yeah, he didn't need to do that.
Yeah, he didn't need to worry
that's
about
true.
That.
That's mm-hmm. true. They know he killed her.
Yeah. So I'm going to go into crime scene. So this is the door. This is where she was slumped over. So basically she was using the restroom. And then here is the bat. See the blood everywhere. The blood's what all was in the there.
Bat for? I thought he did it with his legs.
No.
It didn't work.
He went and got a cricket bat.
Oh.
Why didn't he just shoot the doorknob?
Well, because he didn't know who was in there. It dawned
if he
on
thought
she
it was her,
thought she was alive,
he'd
maybe.
Be nervous to shoot again.
Didn't they find her? She was in the bathroom on the phone.
That's her. So she got hit in her hip first, and then as he kept shooting, she actually took a headshot, and you can see the bruising around her eye.
Stop! I can hear it
because it went in there. So it seems like she was curled up like this, mm-hmm. and she did try to cover herself while she was being shot. Okay, they're off.
Where was the first shot?
Into her hip.
And she didn't scream.
I think she did, but that's where if you fired a shot, I don't know if he would have heard her.
Yeah, those are loud.
Yeah, a 9 mil is very loud. Yeah. Even like if you're outside shooting, you're not going to be able to hear.
Yeah.
I've gone to shooting ranges and fired mine and you can't hear. So I can imagine in a marble, you know, mm-hmm. area, small area, he probably didn't hear anything. So here's what I believe, that while Pistorius was messing with the fans, Reva went to use the restroom and she opened the window before going into the toilet. So he heard her open yeah. the window. I will concede it's possible he may not have heard her or seen her leave the room due to the marble floors. Because if she was barefooted or if she's wearing just socks, he would not have heard her.
Yeah.
And if it was that dark, he would not have seen her.
Well, and he's bringing all that stuff in. He's loud.
Yeah. So
is that a monkey?
Yeah. So we do.
What an unusual pet.
We do know that she did use a restroom because her bladder was empty. So she was in the restroom. If she had been sleeping from not long, like 10 until the early morning hours, she would have still had some urine in her bladder. So they do know she did get up. And I'm not aware that she had any urine on her post-shooting. So typically, when you die, you release all of that. Okay, so what are your thoughts so far? Just to do a check-in, Elena, what are you thinking?
I don't think he knew it was her. He super fearful, super paranoid, but he shot the gun and then he realized it could have been her, so he's just trying to get that door open. He's not going to do that if you think it's an intruder. And then trying to get her closer to the door, closer to the doctor, ambulance, I get that. And then the fact that he's trying to help her live.
Yeah.
And the doctor witnessed it.
Yeah. Still innocent?
I do. I think it was a horrible accident.
Susan? But
so far with all this, yeah.
I think she was going to leave him.
Keep an open mind.
She had had enough because she was saying that he was...
Yes. Really can't hear.
Like, she was ready to get away from him because of the way he'd been acting.
But there's no proof of that.
But yes, yeah. There... Well, she had... made a statement to her mom or to someone that she's breaking up with him, that she didn't want to be with him anymore. I think they got into an argument, and she went to go to the restroom, and he killed her.
But when you argue, a lot of people are like, oh, Lena or Susan, I'm going to break up with him. But they don't.
So where did you get that? Because in my research, I didn't hear anything about her telling her mom that.
She was on the phone when a lot of that happened, and there were some recordings or something, he's trying to kill me.
I didn't hear that.
I remember when that first came out, there was something about...
That's why I asked about the phone.
She's saying he was trying to kill her or something. That's one of the reasons why I think he did it on purpose.
I heard she was texting someone, but I didn't hear anything about
it. I think she was over it. I think she was done with him.
I never found any, even in the court documents of the prosecution, I didn't find anything about that. So I wonder if that was true or if the media said that.
Yeah, media.
The media could have. I don't know, but...
Elena, can you text that? If Reva, R-E-E-V-A, if Reva was texting... while she was being shot, because there is something weird with the phones, which we're going to get into. Because right now, we're just going through his version of events. We're now going to get into the prosecution.
So those are court?
R-E-E-V-A.
And in court papers, it doesn't say anything, but I thought media said she was on the phone texting, but...
There's some chilling messages to him before he shot her.
Okay, what does it say?
Like how long before? Because they found messages that she was angry at him, but not that night.
Supposedly, prosecutors said he killed her in a cold blood after the pair had an argument during trial. Court heard how the model had told her boyfriend that she was scared of him just weeks prior. I'm scared of you, you said that. She wrote... how he often erupted into jealous tantrums, accused her of flirting.
Yeah, we already talked about that.
Yeah, but that doesn't make him a killer.
Well, no, it doesn't, because that was part of the few messages out of the 1,700.
Yeah, just a few.
So is there more?
Yeah, 90% of them were loving.
Right, but when you're scared of someone,
you don't go home with them.
You're trying to deflect.
But why would she stay the night with him?
Yeah, she wouldn't stay the night with him.
Valentine's Day.
For the next week or two.
She was like, I'm done after this, or I'm going to break it off.
If she's scared of
him, she meets the boyfriend. No. 2 days later, she's shot 4 times.
But she stayed with him.
That wasn't a coincidence.
Maybe.
So 2 or 3 nights.
This message, it doesn't say to who, though. I am the girl who let go. Oh, to him. With you, even when I was scared out of my mind, too. I'm the girl who fell in love with you and wanted to tell you this weekend. But I'm also the girl that gets sidestepped when you are in a crap mood.
Yeah, they had had a, they definitely had some fights.
But she still stayed with him after many of the fights, so.
Yeah, but it clearly said above that this was the prosecutor's I'm just trying to, if y'all want to go ahead, I'm just trying to find the message because it said chilling message right before he shot her.
Yeah. So to me, right before is going to be right before. Yeah, it's not going to be weeks earlier. We already have those.
Yeah.
So as far as like if she was scared of him and they were going to break up, I don't see her spending the Valentine's Day with him. I would see, however, her going out there to have a conversation, break it off with them, but not pack an overnight bag and stay the night.
Right.
And so,
did they find her overnight bag? Did they find the evidence that she was staying?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, in fact, they had the text messages. She said, I think I'd like to stay overnight with you, stay the night with you. And I said, absolutely. So they, I mean, the messages were fine. So unless she sent something when she was in the bathroom, I'm not aware of any text messages where she told anyone that he was trying to kill her or he was trying to get to her. I didn't find any testimony that she told anyone that she was scared for her life. I just don't see her staying the night if she was that scared.
And if someone's shooting at you, you're not going to be on your phone.
Well,
you'd be ducking.
What the media originally said is that they got in a fight. She grabs her phone, goes to the bathroom, and starts texting people that she's in the bathroom scared because he's lost his ever-loving mind.
Which wasn't true.
And so that's what they were saying happened.
So I'm still not finding anything, but a week before he shot her, he actually did a shooting at a restaurant.
Yeah, and I've got the story on that. It was an accident.
Yeah, but I don't know. One of y'all said something that...
Yeah, that was actually an accident.
Me
he
to
shouldn't have had any
think
weapon.
About that.
No.
So yeah,
it was
we'll
an accident. He had a weapon or an accident he shot someone.
Yeah,
that wasn't. You don't accidentally shoot people.
Yeah, you do.
How?
If you don't know how to use a weapon, you can shoot. It happens.
Wasn't he
all the time.
Raised with guns?
Did he fire them and use them well? I have no idea. The dude should have never had a weapon.
Yeah.
But the restaurant incident was he accidentally shot a guy in a foot when he grabbed, like the guy's handing him the weapon and he grabs it and he shoots. Yeah, it wasn't even his weapon.
It was someone else's gun?
That was handing it to him. Yeah.
I thought it was his gun.
No. So, but we'll get to that. Oh, do you have one more thing to add?
Or staying the night, though.
I want to do an end to the part one. So, because we all actually get to finish.
I just want to know if you talk about one of the neighbor's testimonies.
I do.
Okay.
But keep that up in case there's anything in there.
Okay.
So far. So, for me, to end part one, because believe it or not, we actually made the progress I was hoping we would.
Yay!
So, for me, I'm still undecided. I could go 50-50. That's where I've been stuck.
If there's some weird text, phone calls, proof right before she was shot, same evening or within a day or two, I'd be swayed. I'm still...
Well, he still shot and killed her. So either way, whether it's on purpose or accidental, it's still involuntary manslaughter. So
yeah,
to me, he's guilty.
Well,
at the very least,
right.
Because
what we're discussing is the motive.
Yeah.
You know, was it intentional or was it a fear-based
thing? I think it was a horrible
accident.
I think it
was intentional.
No, there's no proof that it was.
Well, there's no proof there wasn't.
There's no proof that he's innocent either. I mean, that's why this case is so fascinating, is it could go either way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I just could not get to a conclusion. So
now, I would think he was guilty, though, if, you know, there was prior abuse like that, not 10% out of 90 out of emails or texts, and she wasn't that scared because they'd had many fights before. She'd stay the night. They're still together. Regardless, I think she probably would end up breaking up with him.
I
think it's
too.
A horrible, horrible accident.
Yeah. All right, so we'll end part one. So we have our saying. Susan, since everybody's leaving, would you like to say the first part? Do you know?
I don't know what it is.
Be smart.
Be rude.
Don't be a victim.
My mom always
that was
said,
the
never
nicest,
be rude.
Outline of a Murder is a Mr. Joseph production. What do you think, Joseph?